So, with that said, I'm really glad that you have your own audience and that people are willing to hear an alternative. But that is really one of the core problems.
I want to thank you, as always, Dortel, for joining us and sharing your insights with our audiences.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for your listeners for being open to alternative voices, and especially from someone who's inside. Thank you.
My guest has been Dortel Williams, serving a life sentence without parole at Mule Creek State Prison. He's a regular correspondent on this show. And for full disclosure, I'm a member of the committee to free Dortel Williams. And you can find out more about efforts by his allies and supporters to commute his sentence at freedortelwilliams.com. That's freedortelwilliams, D-O-R-T-E-L-L, Williams.com. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, host and executive producer of Rising Up with Sonali, an independently produced, subscriber-supported program nationally syndicated to radio stations, free speech TV, and podcast platforms.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kboo.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kboo.fm.
Follow KBOO on Instagram at KBOO Radio. Ear to the Streets.
You are tuned to KBOO.
Show your support for KBOO today by becoming a member. Just text KBOO to the phone number 44321 and join the thousands of members who make volunteer-powered radio possible.
All right, the time is 7:02. You are tuned to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM, Once Upon a Time with Consuelo.
Good evening, everybody. Here we are again with our guests in this nice program called Once Upon a Time. But before we introduce him or he introduce himself, I will ask for your support and your collaboration. We need to reach $75,000. It is very important to contribute to our station. We are, as you know, a public radio focused in our community. KBOO lost 10% of our funding. We provide a space for unheard and underserved voices and programs like this. You know that I am very grateful. I have been doing this program for 2.5 years, and I have met wonderful writer and artists and all kind of nice and talented people. So I will encourage you, if you are already a member, we offer the option of your existing membership can increase their monthly contribution. And also you can go to, you can send a check or you can do it by text KBOO to 4-4-3-2-1. We are going to be very, very happy, and also we do appreciate tremendously all your collaboration. This campaign is called Fight Back Campaign. We are fighting, and you know obviously why. Okay, so here we are. I am very, very proud and happy to introduce you. Like I said, he will introduce himself. His name is Hugo Moreno. He's a writer, and he is also a professor, literature, Hispanic literature professor at Lewis and Clark. Hi, how are you?
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you very much for having me here.
So go ahead with your introduction.
Well, I will give a very simple introduction. My name is Hugo Moreno, and I'm originally from Juarez, Mexico, the border city. And I have lived in the U.S. Since I started college. Before that, I spent all my childhood and teenagers in Mexico, and then most of my adult life I spent in the U.S. And some in Canada, and 1 year in Bangladesh.
We would like to know, how did you start, at what age did you start writing? Or when did you discover, and how did you discover that you wanted to become a writer?
When I graduated very young from college, when I was 20, and my dream was to become a painter one day.
Oh.
That was my dream. I was not a reader as a child. I read some books that I really loved, but my ideal, I loved painting, drawing, and that was what I really wanted
what
to do.
What kind of a style of painting?
Honestly, I loved drawing. I especially liked drawing, and I wanted to learn to do oil painting. That's probably what I wanted, but I never did it. It was more like a dream. More like an idea that I had, that I would work really hard, make a lot of money, and by the age of 30, just be an artist. That was my dream, my fantasy.
Very good, very good.
So, but when I started to work after graduating when I was 20, I discovered that what I really had studied for was not for me, and I went through a personal crisis. And in that personal crisis, I realized that I wanted to write, and it came from nowhere. It was just like, I want to write. I had this feeling that I wanted to write books, and I did not write. I did not read or anything. It was just like some kind of a calling that I had. And then I decided to go back to graduate school and study literature. And then I spent many years being a graduate student. I decided to do 3 master's degrees and 1 PhD, because basically I feel like I needed to learn so much to become a writer. And by the time that I finished my PhD, I started to become a professor and academic, and my dream was to write fiction, but then I started to write academic essays and books, and never had time to write until I said, I'm just going to have to retire, to give up my academic career to become a writer. So I took a year off in 2004 and started to write became this novel that I finally published in 2020.
Lucky us that you made that big decision and that transition, because that is all what you experience is a very common problem for all of us artists, that we think that we can manage to have a full-time job and also to write. I couldn't also. And so sometimes you have to make the decision. Bueno, this is a novel. And how long it took you to write this novel?
Well, as I said, I started writing in 2004, and I basically retook it in 2015 after went through many, many changes and decided to finally sit down and write it. That was here in Portland. And I wrote it. I did a lot of research for 5 years until I decided to publish it in August of 2020.
Very good. Yeah, lucky us. Is this obviously your first novel?
It's my first novel. Yeah.
Yeah. Will you consider this novel autobiographical?
Not autobiographical, but there's a lot of me in it, and people who know me can identify the parts that are related to my life, but especially I would say my psychic life. You know, my mind is here very much, like my wife says. Well, you know, of course, I can totally see this is your novel.
Yeah, in some way, like Joyce did with Portraits of an Artist, more or less, that not necessarily is qualified as an autobiography, but is an autobiography. I don't know you very much, but I saw some aspect, at least location, because you speak about Juarez and Mexico and then Cornell and New York, upstate New York. So, and I don't know if I am right, but how you just said that you have that kind of awakening when you realize that you have to do something different, and you were in a period where you were a little bit lost. Bueno, this character is in that state of mind.
Absolutely. Yes.
Absolutely. So in my opinion, it's a lot of little thing here and there, and that you use it from your own experience.
Absolutely, yes. And I also take many, many parts, not only of my life, but people that I know, people who I grew up with. So it's a little bit of a combination of my life and that of people around me, trying to put together a story that talks about the place where I come from.
Yeah, you describe very well. And another thing that is interesting in the novel is what role does music play, or what role does music play in your literature? Because there is a lot of music, and we start this wonderful program with Mahler, Gustav Mahler, that Hugo chose, and fantastic, and that is named in the book. So what is the role?
I would say that it plays a very crucial role, in that their character is always listening to music in the background. He is in a state of he is supposedly asleep, but he's traveling in dreams, but there's always music. And the music is very present in the novel. Different kinds of music, just as we live today, we are constantly listening to music in our headphones and earbuds.
Yeah. Also, we have to think, and we know that he's younger, and at that time in our life, 20s, 30s, we are very in tune with music, and that is the reason, because we always go back to that music when we are not that young anymore. And at the same time, music has a very strong relationship with writing. I think it's the world has their own music. Okay, we would like to have your introduction about, describe a little bit your novel, so this way we will understand the places that you are going to read.
Yeah, so basically the novel tells the story of a character whose name is Uriel Romero, who is utterly confused about what's happening to him, because he suddenly wakes up in a world, in a realm of dreams, and it's a series of dreams from which he cannot wake up. And these are dreams across time. Like, he goes back in to colonial New Mexico, and he lives the life of a friar, a Franciscan friar. But he also goes back to his previous life, to his past, and he relives his own life. And he's utterly confused what's happening to him, because he thinks he's awake, but he cannot wake up. So he's moving in time. And basically the novel is his desire to wake up from these dreams and nightmares that he's continuing to have. And he just doesn't know what's happening. And basically the whole novel is that process of trying to awaken.
Yeah, it is interesting that how you call your character, main character, is mean light of God.
Yes.
And you did that in purpose?
Absolutely, yes.
Yes, I thought an angel. That is the reason. Because I thought it has something to do with awakening, like I said before, or flame of God. And it's very interesting, because it's the idea of wisdom, interpretation, and illumination of the guidance. And this is what they want him to become, a guided, because guide, mm-hmm. not a guide, and also a guide. And also he get into a kind of 1666, mm-hmm. the 16th century. Why yes. do you not talk about a little bit about that?
Well, when he is dreaming, as I mentioned, he incarnates, he lives the life of a Franciscan friar who is being accused of heresy. And this friar grew up in Mexico City, and he was sent to the convent by his father because his father didn't know what to do with him. He was very rebellious. And he had spent all his money, basically, and ultimately he tries to help his son to reform himself, and he is accused of heresy, and he is sent to New Mexico because if he doesn't, basically to convert the Apaches or the Ne people, because if he doesn't do it, they're going to send him to the stake. So it's basically he's threatened. So that's why he ends up in New Mexico.
Yeah, it is interesting, but because as Freud, I like Freud very much and his interpretation of dreams. And this book is mainly dreams. And you go from one stage to another, and sometimes you don't even realize, because the character is asking himself, what I'm doing here, is this a dream, or I am where I am? It's mm-hmm. all that confusion. And there is a very delicate line between what is real and what is not real in the book. What is fascinating, in my opinion, because sometimes we have that kind of feeling. He's always asking himself, I am sleeping, I am awake, in what situation I am? And Freud said that wonderful thing, that believe dreams are a royal road to the unconsciousness. And sometimes also our dream are certain anticipation of what we want to live. So in that case, why did you put your character with that kind of environment or in that kind of a state of mind? Are you a dreamer too? I mean, do you have problem with when you go to bed, do you sleep, or was a confusion and you thought this is going to be?
Well, this novel is full of nightmares.
Yes, I know.
I have been suffering many nightmares for many, many years. So, Freud calls dreams wish fulfillment.
Yes.
But this is more the opposite. Like, basically, it's more like punishment. Like, somehow, all his greatest fears are becoming true. He is living his worst nightmares.
Yeah,
and he doesn't know how to wake up from these nightmares.
Yeah, but also Freud suggests that that anxiety of dream or nightmare are also a form of wish fulfillment. But they involve wishes so guilt, reading or painful that the anxiety itself is a primary part of the disguised wish. I have to tell you something. Reading your book, one of the night I was reading your book, very concentrated and very much into the book because I love it, I had a terrible nightmare. So when I wake up the next day, I thought, this is the book. I don't think I am so angry myself. I am not so angry because the dream was a little bit violent. So that was interesting. And I like it very much. Will you say that your novel is what we call realismo mágico?
I would call it more historical fantasy or time travel.
Yeah.
It has a little bit of a historical novel element, but because it's a character who travels in time, and it's not strictly a historical novel because I don't want to necessarily reproduce faithfully the events that happened in the 17th century in New Mexico. Although I do, I try to give accounts that are faithful to history, but it's not like a history book.
Yeah.
So it's more like a historical fantasy, I would call it.
Yeah, but okay.
But it does have elements of magical realism, yes, for sure.
Yes.
It has different. It's a little bit of a. I would call it more like a collage.
I think it's very eclectic.
It is.
And this is what I like it, essentially, because in some way we are in the Inquisition. 16th century, so we are right there, and all the situation that the Native American in Mexico, Apaches, another group of Native, they are living because the Spaniards want to convert them and to tell them that everything they have done before is wrong.
Absolutely, yes. They want to treat their culture as, you know, it is satanic, basically.
Yeah, also they are punished them, and in a way that sometimes we can think that's very cruel, and also they don't allow them to keep going with their tradition, like the dance, for example. They celebrate the day of Saint Mary, and the same way, it was very interesting because in Chile, we do have the same ceremony, but it's still celebrate with all the masks, all the dance, and all the people. And it's for the day that we celebrate Virgin Mary.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating the way how you brought that time in the history of our world in a very vivid way. I almost felt that I was with him in the situation of becoming a monk, a monk, I will say, more than a priest, and how he was living that existence very rigorous. How much research did you do? I read some of the notes that you put in the book, but no wonder, 5 years.
Yes, I didn't know much about the history of the Pueblo people of New Mexico.
Yeah.
I had some general ideas. So I had to learn everything. So I wanted to give a faithful account of how people lived, and also I want to give more also to acknowledge the complexity of the culture, the societies that lived in that time, because it was a mixture of people. You know, there were many cultures coexisting, and I had to learn about each one of them, and also learn, you know, how they dressed, what they ate, everything. I tried to document myself in order to give, you know, like a faithful account, in a way that someone who knows about this would say, yes, this person knows what he's writing about.
No.
And those who have not, studied this history, they can learn from it. But of course, it's not a history book, it's fiction.
Yeah, no doubt that it's very rigorous. The research, you feel, I love research. And the first chapter, I thought that was my question. How did take this writer to do this?
Yeah, I would say that it's a little bit like a collage, because I have a lot of different notes that I took from my research, and it was like putting them together. How do you put it all together in a novel in a way that you can tell these mini stories that I was reading about, and then put them together in a larger plot.
Yeah, one other question before we read. Is are you a believer? Were you raised Catholic?
I was raised very Catholic, yes, and then I became an agnostic when I was in my early 20s.
Yeah, and all this question about not only the faith, but how the Inquisition was imposing in all our America their belief, and how many people die because of that discrimination. So reading your book, I felt that we haven't changed very much.
Unfortunately not.
Unfortunately. Okay, let's go. You start. You are going to read the beginning of the book. You do first.
Okay. How long have I been like this? Hours? Days? Years? Centuries? Am I dead or asleep? Sometimes I embrace a hope that one of these days I'm going to wake up. Other times I'm afraid that they will never come. My body materialized one night in a foggy forest. I was trudging like a sleepwalker, without a sense of direction. It was windy but not cold. I was wearing a black tailcoat and brown moccasins. My body felt heavy, as if it were made of lead. A funeral march marked the rhythm of my steps. I pressed on, stumbling with languor, listening to the solemn music with a cloudy mind. When dawn began to tear the veil of night, I reached a crossroads. It was a forest clearing with an old and contorted juniper at the center, firmly entrenched in the bedrock. From one of its branches hung a sign made of wood with an inscription faded by the rain. I approached it to decipher it. It said, To know the origin is to find the way. I paused to decide which way to go. I looked around and realized that I wasn't alone. The forest glade had been suddenly transformed into the stage of a carnival. There was a multitude of people from different epochs and cultures dressed in extravagant costumes. An orchestra was playing an enchanting landler. I recognized Alma amid the crowd. She was dressed like an Andalusian maja. When she saw me, she walked toward me, stood in front of me, and greeted me without saying a word. She simply looked at me, smiled, and asked me to dance by extending her hand. I accepted with trepidation, remembering that she was dead. But when I held her hand, my sadness disappeared like magic. "I can't believe you're here. I thought you had gone to a better place. I missed you," I said, smiling as we walked toward the stage. We danced like Maria and Captain Von Trapp in The Sound of Music, in both the landler and an exquisite scherzo that the orchestra played to everyone's delight. We were enjoying each other's company like two young lovers. But when we were about to kiss, she suddenly stepped back and told me, alarmed, "I don't know who you are. Let go of me." She then vanished. Everyone else also disappeared, and the sylvan glade became desolate again. I stood motionless by the juniper, not knowing what to do or where to go. "Where are you, Alma?" A gust of wind was answered me with a cold and impersonal silence that chilled me to the marrow. I fell on my knees and started to cry like a little boy. Then a ghost spoke to me and tried to convince me to go back whence I came. "I don't know why," I replied. "I've reached the point of no return in life."
Nice. Now my part. I would not read it completely, but the first part at least. ¿Cuánto tiempo hará que estoy así? ¿Horas? ¿Días? ¿Años? ¿Siglos? ¿Estoy muerto o dormido? A veces abrigo la esperanza de que uno de estos días me despertaré. Otras veces temo que ese día nunca llegará. Aparecí una noche en un bosque neblinoso. Caminaba como un sonámbulo en la penumbra, sin saber a dónde. Hacía viento, pero no frío. Vestía un frac negro y unos mocasines pardos. Sentía el cuerpo pesado, como si fuera de plomo. Una marcha fúnebre marcaba el ritmo de mis pasos. Avanzaba con dificultad y desgano, escuchando la solemne música en el entendimiento nublado. Cuando la aurora comenzó a rasgar el telón de la noche, llegué a una encrucijada. Era un claro de bosque que tenía en el centro un viejo enebro retorcido, cimentado en una saliente de roca. De una de sus ramas colgaba un cartel de madera con una inscripción borrada por la lluvia. Me acerqué para descifrarla, decía. Conocer el origen es hallar el camino. Hice una pausa para decidir qué rumbo tomar. Miré a mi alrededor y me di cuenta de que en realidad no estaba solo. El claro de bosque se había transformado repentinamente en el escenario de un carnaval. Había una multitud de personas de distintas épocas y culturas vestidas de manera extravagante. Una orquesta sinfónica tocaba un lander encantador. Distinguí a Alma entre la muchedumbre. Estaba vestida de maja andaluza. Cuando me vio, se me acercó para saludarme. Se paró frente a mí sin decir nada. Simplemente me miró, me sonrió y me extendió la mano para que bailara con ella. Acepté, desganado, pero al estrechar su mano, el gran peso que cargaba y mi tristeza desaparecieron como por arte de magia. It's beautiful, ¿cierto? I underline this. Conocer el origen es hallar el camino. That is fundamental. If you don't know where you are going, you will never find your road.
Yes, that's a central phrase.
Yeah, and also
phrase.
This wonderful beginning. ¿Cuánto tiempo hará que estoy así? That is a fundamental question. It's nothing that we didn't... we haven't asked before in the history of humanity. Isn't it? We all want to know where we come from, where are we going, and what are we doing here?
And unfortunately, we probably don't find the answer, and maybe in the end.
Yeah, some people find the answer in the faith, in their faith, and also in being good people, good person, that with a good ethic, work ethic, and personal ethic, moral. And that is enough. My father, for example, was an agnostic, but he was a good man, and that was his faith, to be as good as you can be. Sometimes it's good enough, don't you think?
Well, that's all you can do.
Yeah.
I mean, to do your best.
Do you believe in reincarnation?
No, I don't.
You don't?
I don't believe in reincarnation.
You don't?
In the novel, the person seems to be struggling with that question.
Yes. Okay. Do you want to comment a little bit this beginning?
Why don't we pass to the next one, where it very much captures a part of the story, which is talking about death.
Okay.
So this is he has a dream.
So we go to page 17.
Yeah, okay. In your version in Spanish, yes.
Page 17. Okay, you
I
can
dreamed
start.
I was dead. My family was keeping vigil over my body at a funeral home in Ciudad Juarez. My eldest brother, Virgilio, was talking to Sergio Mendoza, one of my best childhood friends, whom I hadn't seen since 1988, the year I left Juarez. Sergio was a professor of Latin American literature at the University of Juarez. My brother was telling him I had been working on a novel about the Juarez femicides and had left many binders full of drafts. Virgilio was interested in knowing if there was anything publishable in those drafts and asked him if he could possibly sort them out and edit them. Sergio answered he was going to be quite busy over the next few months, but that maybe he would find time to do so next year. I wanted none of that and said to myself, I don't need help. I can put together a novel myself. I will show them. I pushed the casket lid, sat up, gave an acrobatic leap to the floor, and started to dance and sing El Hombre Vivo. However, nobody seemed to notice or hear me. They continued to get visual as if I were truly dead. I told them, here I am, here I am. Are you people deaf or blind? Cheer up, go home. You're keeping watch over a ghost. But nobody paid attention. So this is the end of that dream.
Okay. Soñé que estaba muerto. Me estaba bailando mi familia en una funeraria de Ciudad Juárez. Mi hermano mayor, Virgilio, hablaba con Sergio, uno de mis mejores amigos de la infancia, a quien yo no veía desde el 88 cuando me fui de Juárez. Sergio era profesor de letras hispanoamericanas y mi hermano le estaba contando que yo había dejado incompleto muchos manuscritos de diversa índole. Virgilio estaba interesado en saber si había algo publicable entre las cajas con cuadernos y apuntes que había yo dejado al morirme. Le preguntó a Sergio si podía ayudarlo en esta tarea. Sergio le respondió que en los próximos meses iba a estar muy ocupado, pero que posiblemente tendría tiempo a principios del año próximo. No pude soportarlo. No necesito ayuda, pensé. Puedo editar mi novela yo solo. Será mejor desengañarlos. Empujé la tapa del ataúd y me incorporé. Di un salto acrobático al piso y me puse a cantar y a bailar. Y no estaba muerto, andaba de parranda. Pero nadie pareció verme o escucharme. Seguían todos velándome como si en verdad estuviera muerto. Yo les decía, aquí estoy, aquí estoy. ¿Acaso están sordos y ciegos? Alégrense, váyanse a sus casas. Están velando a un fantasma. Pero nadie me hizo caso. En eso me despertaron unas voces y unos vítores. Una docena de indios nos había rodeado para darnos la bienvenida a su ranchería. Evidentemente, nos estaban esperando. Es interesante, como te lo comenté un día, nosotros en Chile usamos y no estaba muerto, andaba de parranda, tal cual. Sí. ¿Qué puede, what can you say about this part of the novel?
Well, he is wondering throughout his dreams if he has actually died, because he remembers that he had an accident in a bicycle, and he remembers that's the last memory he has.
Yes.
When he hit himself in the head, and then he's wondering if he's in a hospital, or if he's in a state of coma, or if he's dead, or if he's just dreaming.
And then most of the time he feels that he's in a coma or he's in a surgery, so he's having a surgery and the anesthesia is giving all this image in his mind.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I have to mention that this novel, I was partly inspired by this very well-known story by Julio Cortázar.
Yes.
Titled La Noche Boca Arriba.
Exactamente.
The Nice Face Up.
Which had
basically
it right here.
Tells a story about someone who has an accident in a motorcycle and is in a hospital and then dreams that he's being followed, chased by the Aztecs during the War of the Flowers, because they want to capture him to sacrifice him. So in that sense... It has that.
Yeah, I will
reference.
Remind our audience, our phone number here is 503-231-8187. If you want to make a call, this is the right moment to do it. And you can ask a little bit more about this wonderful book. And we will be answering, hopefully. And yes, that is a short story by the Argentinian Julio Cortázar that you took it, that inspiration from him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also Borges has many situations in his short story that they are, like you, eclectic and passing from reality to dream and vice versa.
Yes. Very true.
Yeah, because sometimes we ask ourselves, this is really our reality?
And those are the kinds of questions that the protagonist is constantly asking. What is reality? What is a dream? And he doesn't know, but he's literally suffering that question.
Yeah. I think it's a very human question. I mean, we all want to know. And sometimes, especially, I have had some dreams in my life that they are what we call, they're telling me what is going to happen, and it did happen. Good, there were no bad dreams, and must be because I was fulfilling something that I wanted to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you are intuitive, it's very likely that you will have that kind of experience. I think it's one way how we anticipate sometime what is going to happen.
Yes, my novel, I wanted to explore the world of dreams and how intimately related they are to our everyday life, and how can they form an integral part of our life, even if we forget what we dreamed. It's part of who we are, what we dream, and part of our day. I'm still very intrigued by the importance and the relevance of dreams in our life, and the possible connection to alternative realities, for instance.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's I used to have a Do we have a caller? Yeah, pass it to me. Hi. Hello.
Buenas noches, Consuelo.
Buenas noches. Who is speaking?
It's Johan. ¿Cómo está?
Oh, Johan, my dear Johan. Nice, nice that you call. Do you have a question for our guest? This is an interesting
course.
Book. You need to read this book.
I will. I'm definitely interested. I've got a few questions, of course.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. You almost answered one of my questions just in while I was waiting to be transferred. when you said if you don't always remember your dreams, they still affect you. And I was curious because earlier you'd said you've had several like bad dreams or nightmares. Would you rather have nightmares, or would you rather have no dreams at all, in terms of no memory of your dreams, in terms of your own artistic reflection or mental reflection of your subconscious progression?
Oh, I mean I do have many nightmares constantly, and that's part of, you know, my life. And I think that it is a source of inspiration, and it's also a challenge, right? Because they become like ghosts in your life, and vice versa. The ghosts in your life become your nightmares. So it's a little bit like, like what Consuelo cited Freud calling dreams the royal road to the unconscious. And that's basically, you know, knowing yourself, learning to know who you are. It's a process of also understanding your dreams. So I think that
the creative
process that really poses a lot of questions to you and challenges you. So I think nightmares, even though they are, you know, difficult, I think that they tell you messages that you need to listen.
I agree there, yes. Another question that I was curious about, I'm also a writer.
And a good one. Very good one.
Yes, thank you. When I read, for instance, Pablo Neruda's poetry, I'm just like, I'm almost shattered, because I know I will never be able to write poetry like that, because I didn't grow up thinking and creating in Spanish, in Espanol, you know?
Right.
Do you believe that your time as an adult in the United States has influenced your thinking to a point that it either enhances or cancels, let's just say, like the perception of archetypes that might exist, you know, based on whether you're thinking primarily in Spanish or whether you're thinking primarily in English, you know?
Mm-hmm. I would say
the Day of the Dead, right? I mean, that exists. That exists in cultures all over the world, right? But how we perceive that is based on the culture and the language, you know?
Yeah.
Can I ask something related? When you dream in English or you dream in Spanish?
I think nowadays I dream in both languages.
Oh,
I have become very, very bilingual. What I want to say is that I consider it that the two languages have very much enriched my life and my psychic life. I would say, if you put it in terms of, say, for instance, the archetypes, as you mentioned, the world of archetypes, they're very different, but it's just... you know, more variety, I would say. It's very diverse, and it's very enriching, but also very challenging, because you almost become like two people. You know, when in one language you are in a particular way, you have a particular set of habits and thoughts, whereas in the other language you have others. And then it's like you're moving in two different worlds.
It's what I call multiply by two.
Yes.
That's actually been documented. There's a book by a woman named Julie Sadaivi who basically has done research or cites research which says, yes, you know, when you become fully bilingual, it's you do have two different. And that relates to like neurology, right? Because each language is going to have its own specific neural pathways. So it's not going to do the same thing every time, right? When I say, you know, andale, andale, arriba, right? As an American who grew up like watching, cartoons,
right.
I'm like, that means Speedy Gonzalez to me, right?
You know? Right.
But as somebody who grew up speaking Spanish, it means something completely different. You know?
Yes.
You are absolutely right, because I read the book in Spanish, and I share with Hugo during the week that I enjoy to find it so many words that my parents use. Words that I haven't listened for years. So when I listen to those words, I read to the word, and then I pronounce myself, it was almost like to be home. And I realized how homesick I am.
Yes, because language is like a home.
Yes, yes. So it was beautiful. So many little words one to another, and also some of the description of the tradition of the Indian in Mexico. Some of the tradition, like I said before, we had it also, we have it until now in Chile, and we celebrate with a lot of pride. And it's nice, but I think that your question is very interesting, and as a person who has wrote in both languages, you have to look in another place in your brain when you go to the English, because it's not the same emotion, at least not for me, that your native language. You, as a person who is studying neuroscience, know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could I ask one more question?
Yes. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, please.
Yes. Go ahead. Are you there? What happened? Oh, hang up. Okay.
Yes. Hello.
Yeah. Tell, because we have 5 more minutes. What is the question?
Okay, great. You know, since you said Indian, right? That reminded me of one of my questions.
Yes.
There's a tribe that basically has existed on the quote unquote the border between the United States and Mexico, called the Tohono O'odham, and they have symbols. They have a symbol for something they call the man in the maze, which has amazingly strong parallels to what Western or, you know, Europeaners call, like, I forget the, darn it. Okay, the Minotaur and the maze and the, what's where the Minotaur belongs?
The labyrinth?
Yes, the labyrinth.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was wondering if, from your experience as living on both sides of the borders, if you see if you've seen any like symbols or archetypes that you feel are native to each culture but not recognized at all as being
so it's good that you mention it. In the novel there's a part in which the character is in a cave where there are some petroglyphs.
Yes.
And there's some of these drawings are labyrinths, and these types of drawings have been found all over the world. And there's a towards the end of the novel, there's there's a part in which he is being taught to draw petroglyphs to tell his story.
Mm.
And so I will leave it at that. But yes, it's very much present.
Of course, the Inquisition and the people, the church, when they saw, at least in the book, when they saw those jeroglifico, and they kind of rejected them. They didn't accept it, and like in many other places in the world.
Yeah.
Okay, my dear, I am very happy to hear.
Thank you very much for
you.
Your questions.
Thank you. Good question as always.
Nice talking to you.
Write to me, okay? And take care.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you
all
very
right,
much.
Night.
Bye-bye. Okay, you need to read, and with this we finish. The 139.
The moon and the sun are eternal travelers. Wind, water, and dust are too. So are we when we dream. Before moving into this apartment more than 6 months ago, I set out to follow Matsuo Bacho's example of making my life a permanent journey to the interior. However, since I do not write in verse and suffer from writer's block every time I intend to compose a literary work, I decided to look for another Zen master to learn the art of writing. A treatise on archery written by a German philosophy professor named Eugen Herrigel has become my new guide. There I have learned that every art has a spiritual aim and that the writer, like the archer, becomes his own goal, to perfect himself. The purpose of my writings has since been not to produce literary art, as I intended, but to train the mind, to strengthen it, temper it, and purge it of emotions, attachments, intentions, ideas, and concepts, until it is emptied and put into its primordial state. I aspire to write an octambulist novel in which the writer's hand and the keyboardist's fingers are guided by the unconscious, a writing that writes itself, a writing without a name, an artless writing in which the writer and writing are one and the same. Who am I really? Why am I here? Why did I come into this world? Who and where am I when I dream? Who or where was I before I was born? Who or where will I be after I die? Does my supposed existence or my alleged and eventual non-existence have any meaning at all? What is my mission in this world? I'm writing a dream diary because I have asked myself these questions since I was a child. I've concluded that dreams are a mirror of reality that help us better know ourselves and inquire and question the ultimate nature of the material world and reality. Dreams are experiences as authentic and meaningful as everyday events, and more revealing than these.
Yeah, very good. I will read part of that because we are on the, almost on finish, and I want you to talk where the book can be found and your website and everything. Me propuse a sí mismo hacer un reporte diario fidedigno de mi sueño. Como no escribo en verso y sufro de bloqueo cada vez que me propongo componer una obra literaria, decidí buscar otro maestro zen que me enseñara el arte de escribir. Lo encontré en un maestro de tiro con arco, judo, cuyo método ha sido explicado y divulgado por uno de sus alumnos, un profesor alemán de filosofía de nombre Eugen Herrigel, en un conocido tratado sobre este arte marcial. Allí aprendí que todo arte tiene una meta espiritual y que el escritor, como el arquero, se convierte en su propio blanco, perfeccionarse a sí mismo. Beautiful, beautiful. Okay, where we can find the book?
Well, the book can be ordered basically at any bookstore. It's distributed by Simon & Schuster.
Yeah.
So you can order it anywhere in the U.S., I suppose. You can order it in any local bookstore.
What is the name in English?
Where the North Ends.
Oh, okay. Where the North Ends.
And it's published by the University of New Mexico Press.
Yeah, and tell me, or tell us, what is your website?
My website is www.hugos.site.
Very good.
Hugos, my name.
You will have to come back.
I would love to.
Yeah,
yes. Thank you very much for having me.
We need to read other part of this wonderful book, and we have to talk more about dreams and God or belief and faith and philosophy and how we can be better human being and have a better life. Okay,
delighted.
We are just at the end, and I hope we will finish with Mahler, and we will be here the 26th of December with my friend Johan, the one who called. He is going to be his participation in the program will be rerun, and so the people who hasn't listen to him, I encourage them to do it and to buy his books. And also, I think it will be very good idea to take note of all this book. He has 5 books in relation to neuroscience and other subjects that they're very important. And I wish you a Merry Christmas and New Year. I will be back in the second week of January. Thank you very much. I do appreciate. Bye-bye. Ponga la música.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Hello, dear listeners. Oil for Kisses is a monthly program on KBOO.